Hi ho ho, and welcome to the Boy Time Podcast. I am HR Giger, and as always, I'm joined by Babby. We have a fun and exciting week for you on this episode of the Boy Time Podcast. It's Dune week. Everybody loves Dune. It's everybody's favorite franchise now. I guess. I have seen Dune 2. There will be a little bit, just a little bit of discussion about that, just because Babby has not seen it, and I don't want to spoil it for people. So I will give kind of first impressions, but we won't be spending a whole lot of time on it. Maybe once Babby sees it, we will have a bigger discussion about it.
Feature.
A feature. We could do a feature about it. That would be fun. This is kind of a mini feature because when I say it's Dune week, I mean it's Dune week. I spent a lot of time. I watched the first Denis Villeneuve Dune in preparation for seeing the second one. I saw the David Lynch Dune after I saw the second one. And I saw the hit documentary Jodorowsky's Dune. I actually saw that today, which is fascinating. So we'll be talking about all of those because technically there have been kind of three distinct eras of Dune adaptations. One of them was in the 70s by Jodorowsky, who we recently kind of brushed up on in the Desert Marathon during the Acid Western week. I was like, I should see El Topo, but it's not on anything, and I felt bad because it's like the Acid Western. Well, turns out after El Topo, someone decided it was a great idea for him to adapt Dune. And can I say a weird choice? But I think after watching the documentary, it was really interesting because they got like a lot of the people who were involved, including Jodorowsky himself, which I think during the time, like when they were filming that, he was in his 80s, but like he did not like act it. He's still as charismatic and eccentric as he ever was. And it's kind of crazy. He's still alive. He's in his like mid 90s, I think. He was like born in the late 1920s. So he's still kicking. Theoretically, Jodorowsky's Dune could still get made. I don't see that ever happening, but it's kind of interesting because, you know, it was being made before Star Wars, or before Star Wars came out, which is important to note because, you know, sci-fi was kind of, at least sci-fi in like the Hollywood sphere was kind of forever changed after that first Star Wars movie came out. It's kind of evident in like the Star Trek movies, because I think the motion picture, the first one, was being developed right alongside the original Star Wars movie, and that movie is very, very different. It feels like 2001 more so than a Hollywood sci-fi movie. And then after that, the Star Trek movies kind of became more Star Wars-ified, kind of more fantasy adventure than like true sci-fi. So this movie was made before that. It had some people involved that went on to work on Star Wars, which is kind of interesting. But like this, the team here is nuts. The people that Jodorowsky was able to pull in to work on this movie is crazy. I won't go too much into like the crew, but like of note, like H.R. Giger did a lot of the like concept art for the movie. If you don't know who that guy is, probably one of my favorite like artists ever in terms of like still images, I guess. Really, really unique art style, kind of like, I think he describes it as like biotechnological or something. It's this weird mesh of like humanity and technology, very kind of weird surrealist stuff. But most famously, he designed the xenomorphs for the Alien movies. I think the Xenomorph in the original Alien was based off a painting of his, which, by the way, the painting of the Xenomorph, the head thing is way more phallic than it ever was in the Alien movies. So there's some trivia for you. But he did a bunch of the concept art for Jodorowsky's Dune, and some of that is still floating around. Ooh boy, this would have been a really weird and dark movie. Like, I think the concept art for Baron Harkonnen's ship, the bad guys. Do I have to talk about, I guess that maybe I should talk about the plot of Dune a little bit, because it might be a little confusing. But basically, the Atreides are the good guys. Let's just oversimplify it. The Atreides are the good guys. The Harkonnens are the bad guys. The Harkonnens and the, like, galactic emperor wipe out all of the Atreides, except for Paul Atreides, who has basically been set up by space witches to, like, be this, like, prophesized, like, legend in culture of the spice planet. But basically, that's just, get that out of the way. We'll go more into it as we get going. But that's the basic setup. But yeah, the Harkonnen ship was originally like, it's this giant ship that was like modeled after Baron Harkonnen. So it's like a big guy, kind of like Spaceballs, I guess. It's really weird. But yeah, so that's the concept artist. That's really all I'm going to go into the crew, because the cast is really weird. I mean, first of all, you got Orson Welles as Baron Harkonnen, which I just think is hilarious. Jodorowsky was saying in the documentary that, like, he picked Orson Welles as Baron Harkonnen because he had this bad reputation in Hollywood that he was just, like, eating and drinking all the time, so much that he was, like, eating movie scripts because he wasn't making anything for a really long time, which is kind of weird. That's a weird rumor to be going around Hollywood, but I guess it was the 70s. So he's like, oh, that's the perfect guy for Baron Harkonnen, a big fat guy that floats around and sits in a tub all the time. So, and Orson Welles somehow agreed to that. So there's that. Mick Jagger was attached to play Fade Rautha, who is Austin Butler's character in the newest Dune, the big scary guy. Not really a big scary guy. He's kind of a twink, but a scary twink.
Impossible.
I know. Well, I'm rather scared of Timothée Chalamet in Dune 2. And he's like the exemplification of twink, I think.
I think so.
Yeah.
I twink so.
I twink so too. So suffice to say, I think Mick Jagger might have been a little bit worse at it than Austin Butler, because I think Austin Butler in the Dune 2 is like one of the best performances in that movie, if not the best. I was genuinely scared and intimidated by him. And I'm like, that's the guy from Elvis. I won't be scared of him. He is very scary. So Mick Jagger was there. The Galactic Emperor was being played by Salvador Dali. I didn't know he was acting. Yeah, I didn't know he acted. Yeah, but he was... the funny thing was, he was basically like, yeah, I'll work for your movie only if I get paid $100,000 an hour. Which even accounted for inflation, that's crazy. And basically, like, the producers had to, like, do this workaround where they're like, you know what, we'll pay you $100,000 a minute. And Dali was like, oh yeah, that's way better than what I planned. I'm going to be the richest guy in the whole world. And basically they just kind of like, were like, okay, how much screen time do we need the Emperor for? And Jodorowsky's like, 3 minutes maybe. And they're like, okay, we'll just pay him $300,000 for 3 minutes of screen time. So they kind of did a little workaround. Although I saw somewhere that like, during the production, they asked Dolly to leave because, if you didn't know this about Salvador Dali, he was kind of pro-Franco in the Spanish Civil War.
Oh, he was a full-on fascist.
Yeah. So, like, they, like, once that, like, because I think there was something where there was, like a big sports game or something, or, like, a, I don't remember what it was, some big event in Franco, in Franco's Spain. And Salvador Dali was, like, invited and attended and was, like, a guest of honor and said some sketchy things about fascism. Although it's kind of weird because, like, pretty much with everything with Dali, like, there's – he contradicts himself all the time. Like, there is stuff –
He was the Kanye of his time.
He really was, because you can find, like, kind of more socialist stuff from him but also, like, a lot of fascist stuff. So, like, there's a lot of weird inconsistencies with his political beliefs, but, you know, that's just him. So I think that would have been really interesting to see him as the Galactic Emperor. Although in the new one, he's played by Christopher Walken, which it's just nice to see him in things, honestly. I don't see him in much anymore. You got David Carradine as Leto Atreides, who is Oscar Isaac in the new one. That one is a weird casting too. I think most people know David Carradine these days from being Bill in Kill Bill. But at the time, he was known mostly as a TV guy for the hit show Kung Fu, where he played an Asian man. So I don't know why Joe Dorowsky was like, yes, this guy is perfect for Leto Atreides. I don't understand, but there's that. And then because Jodorowsky likes involving his son in all of his movies, his son, Brontis Jodorowsky, which, by the way, dope name, was playing Paul, which is kind of unfortunate. Actually, it's a weird pick because at the time he was 12, you know, a little bit too young to be Paul Atreides, I think. But, yeah, weird pull. Basically, this whole cast is just like, why are all of these people working in this one movie? Like, I don't understand how any of these people agreed to be in this. Especially since, like, Joe Dorowsky, at this point, I think he had El Topo and then, like, I forget what the other movie's called. It's Something Mountain that came out before development on this. And, like, those are, like, considered, like, some of the, like, first midnight movies, which is, like, a term that isn't really used anymore. The only time I've heard it used in, like, recent memory is Neil Breen, famous indie filmmaker Neil Breen. He has, like, a very adamant stance where it's, like, if I sell my movie rights to a theater, I have to, it's in the contract, like, the show times are going to be in prime show times. They're not going to be at, like, 10 or 11. This is not a midnight movie. This is, like, a real movie. So, like, that's kind of the reputation that these Jodorowsky movies had. They were, like, these kind of cult midnight movies. Maybe, like, no one's going to see them anyways. Let's just throw them in the midnight slot. So I don't understand how all of these people saw it or, you know, knew of Jodorowsky and were like, oh, well, I want to be in this movie. Especially like Orson Welles. Like, that guy was not in anything in the 70s or the 80s, really, except for the Transformers movie, which is fantastic. I actually haven't seen it, but I just know that he put
his... You got to do all the Transformers movies.
Eventually.
You did Fast and Furious last year.
I did. I know that I just don't care. That's one where I'm like, I don't.
I think it'll be a really neat timepiece.
Yeah?
Yeah, because it's so stuck in that kind of early 2000s aesthetic. It's kind of insane.
But they're still making them.
Yeah.
It's like, I don't understand who's watching it.
Like nobody seen talks about them. And then I just like didn't care.
Yeah. And then they got rid of Shia LaBeouf and they made it Mark Wahlberg. Exactly.
Which is a horrible decision.
That's a downgrade if I've ever seen it.
Real.
Oh, yeah. So maybe one day I'll do all the Transformers movies. But that day is not today. We're doing all the Dune movies today. But yeah, it was kind of interesting because this documentary ends with the kind of like a kind of a great transition in this podcast, because it ends with the release of the David Lynch Dune. And so like basically this whole thing fell apart because Jodorowsky was like, I want this thing to be really long. And basically every studio head they showed this to was like, no, you're going to make it an hour and a half, which we saw how that ended up in the David Lynch Dune, which is rushed and horrible. He was like, no, I want this to be a 12-hour movie, which is not unheard of. But if I don't understand pitching that to a Hollywood exec in the 70s, which granted it was a very different time where more artsy, like auteur driven movies were a more of a thing, but not like that. He was like, I want to make it 12 hours. I want to make it a 20-hour movie, which honestly, I can't believe, but I can't imagine watching a 20-hour movie. I know there was like, I think a biopic about Napoleon that was 8 hours, if I'm remembering right. That's the longest I've heard of, which has only been screened like a couple times in the history of the world. So I don't even know if you can see it anywhere, but it's a silent movie. So if you want to watch an 8-hour thing about Napoleon, try to track it down. I don't really want to, but you know, to each their own. So shopped it around all these studio heads. They all shot him down. And then eventually they're like, okay, we're just going to sell off the right to Dino De Laurentiis. Dino De Laurentiis met up with a very young and aspiring director, David Lynch, and somehow sold David Lynch on it, which I don't understand how that happened either, because, you know, there's that famous little interview of David Lynch giving his story about, because he was one of the people that George Lucas approached to direct Return of the Jedi. There's a great story of David Lynch talking about when he met George Lucas and went to, I think, Skywalker Ranch to go over the details of it. Basically, David Lynch was like, "This, I started getting a headache, getting a migraine, showing me Wookiees. Like, what the hell is that?" And then, but for some reason, when Dino De Laurentiis walks in, it's like, hey, we're going to make a movie about the big worms. And then David Lynch's like, yes, I want to do that. I don't know.
Totally different.
It's totally different. I guess the difference between Star Wars and Dune is that Star Wars is heavily inspired by like Japanese movies and like Japanese culture. Whereas Dune is like heavily inspired by like Middle Eastern, kind of that region, which I think Frank Herbert was very Muslim. Like, I don't know much about him. I just know that I think he liked doing cocaine, and I think he liked Islam, which is a pretty good combination, if you ask me.
The best.
It's the best. It's how you make the best music. Ask Cat Stevens. Actually, I don't know if he did cocaine. Well, I mean, he was a folk artist in the 70s. He probably did something. Yeah, he probably did something. But, yeah, you know, David Lynch's Dune gets made. It ends with this really fun story of Jodorowsky seeing it in the theaters with his sons. And his sons were like, hey, we are warriors, you know, we are brave. Let's do it. Let's see this movie. Because Jodorowsky like really liked David Lynch. Like he was really respected David Lynch after Eraserhead and Elephant Man. So he's like, this is going to suck because this movie is going to be great. Like it's just, it's going to be hard to see my vision done by a director that is also really good, that is also going to put out a really good project, but it's not mine. And like, that was like a big emotional thing for him. And then he was like, yeah. And then, you know, over the course of the movie, like, I ended up getting happier and happier because it sucked. So like, yeah, I'm really glad that it like sucks. I was like, okay, good for you, Jodorowsky. But it was funny because like there was that story, and then like all of the other producers were like, I'm never going to see it. Like, I, you know, they spent years trying to put this thing together, and they're just like, I'm never going to see the David Lynch Dune. And, you know, good for them. I tried to find if Jodorowsky has seen the new one, or at the very least the one from 2021. The only thing I could find was his reaction to the trailer for the first Dune movie. And he was like, it looks nice, but it also looks like Hollywood industrial kind of plastic, which I haven't seen the trailer for Dune Part 1, but I wouldn't really describe either of the Dune movies as that. Like, they don't really seem sanitized. They're kind of weird, heady sci-fi movies, which Villeneuve is really good at. So, I don't know. But that is a little nice transitionary point to talk about the David Lynch Dune, which I did see, unfortunately, because as Jodorowsky said, it is very bad. I went into it knowing very little about it, except that it takes essentially 5 hours, 5 or 6 hours worth of content from the Villeneuve Dune movies and condenses it all into, I think, an hour and a half, maybe an hour 45. I don't remember. So yeah, everything is rushed, and there's like absolutely no subtlety throughout the entirety of the movie. And I don't know who made this decision. I know David Lynch wrote it. I don't know if this was in the editing or whatever, but you're basically always, there's always some sort of dialogue going on throughout the entirety of the movie. And it's not always just people talking, but like, we are like, we hear people's thoughts like throughout the entirety of the movie. Or it's like the narrator is giving us exposition. And it's like, this is so, it's so much. It's, if you are overwhelmed with the first Dune movie, don't watch the David Lynch one, because it is like 10 times worse. It is just constant new information, because they have to have all of the information in this giant book in a really short amount of time. For any of the story beats to make sense. And so, like, I think the David Lynch Dune is, like, fine up until, like, where the end of the first Dune movie ends. It's, like, right around when the Harkonnens come back on Arrakis and wipe out the Atreides. That, up until that point, it's fine. But then it, like, really, really falls apart at the end. It has like some of the worst special effects I've ever seen. Like, everybody is like green screened on like terrible matte paintings, and like they're not superimposed well at all, which, side note, David Lynch is not known for having really great special effects. In fact, I think he's kind of known for having the opposite, unless, except for that one episode of Twin Peaks where he's like, I just want to show everybody I can when I want to. But for the most part, I think having like really like photorealistic or like even realistic special effects is not something high on David Lynch's priorities, which is fine. It's a stylistic thing. But when you're making a sci-fi adventure movie, I need to at least believe that we are on a desert planet, and for the most part I can't, because like, it's terrible green screen. The lighting isn't even close to looking realistic. It's weird. It's a weird choice, But also, I guess, I don't know, color contacts probably weren't a thing in the early 80s. So I can't really blame them for this, but for some reason, yeah, they just have like, I don't know how to describe it. It's like a mask of just like little blue ovals that they like have over the Fremen's eyes. And then they just like kind of toned the opacity down. I don't really know if I'm describing it right, but you kind of get what I'm going. They're not contacts. It's just like little blue ovals that have like 10% opacity or something over everybody's eyes. And then they like track it. It's really bad. Nobody's eyes look similar because it's like their natural eye colors on top of blue, or I guess blue ovals on top of their natural eye colors. So none of the Fremen look alike. It's a mess. And that's not even talking about, I think it's interesting because this movie, Dino De Laurentiis was one of those people that like, he was a very active producer during this time, but I think he might've liked having rock groups score movies, because famously he did Flash Gordon, which was scored by Queen. This movie, for some reason, is scored by Toto.
Great.
I don't know who made that decision, but not the theme music. The theme music was done by Brian Eno. You know, the weirdo ambient guy. That's the guy I want to make the theme music for my sci-fi space epic. Although I will say the music is maybe one of the best parts. It doesn't fit at all. Like, it's just like, yeah, this epic battle at the end of the movie has just like 80s electric guitars in it. And like, it doesn't fit, but it is weird and eccentric enough to be of note. I'm like, okay, well, at least there's that. Everything else is so much. It's so much. It's all in your face. It's really, really bad. So, yeah, I would recommend against seeing David Lynch's Dune. I think the only parts of the movies I really liked was there's a lot of like cutaway scenes with the Harkonnens, none of which are in the Villeneuve version, I guess, obviously. I think David Lynch was just like, hey, these Harkonnens are kind of weird. I'm just going to do a bunch of weird stuff with them. And so then that's just that every like 20 minutes or so, it cuts to them doing some wacky shenanigans. Like the Baron is like floating around in a room while Pete from Twin Peaks is like pulling a lever, which like releases a gas that has like hysterical laughter, and the Baron is just like cackling, and it's just like that for like 30 seconds. I'm like, what am I watching? What is this? Or there's the famous scene where the Baron is like, goes up to one of his scientists and is like, hey, you need to start milking this cat, because the milk of the cat is going to do something. I don't even remember what the point of that is, but it's like a hairless cat in like a glass box. And for some reason they had like white gaffer tape and they taped a rat to like just the side of the cat. And there's just like a close up of this hairless cat with like this rat tape to it. And I'm like, what is this? Who made that decision? Why? And also, okay, Patrick Stewart is in this. He plays the Josh Brolin general man in the Villeneuve one. And for some reason, when the Harkonnens are wiping out the Atreides, when Patrick Stewart is like leading the charge against them, he has like a pug in his left hand and like a sword in the other. I'm like, what are you doing? Why is there just dogs and cats? Like, this is a space movie. Why are there just like rats and cats and dogs? Like, this is so weird. I don't understand any of
that. Cat versus dogs movie.
It is kind of a cats versus
dogs movie ever made.
Yeah, it's like Revenge of Kitty Galore, if you think about it. Mm-hmm. It's actually just like it. Which I have to say, also, Patrick Stewart, because that character comes back towards the end of Dune, after the Atreides are wiped out and Paul is, like, leading this crusade against the Harkonnens, they eventually meet up, and for some reason, they were like, Patrick Stewart, we're gonna give you, like, I guess it's kind of like a wig, but, you know, like, Patrick Stewart, he has, like, the, like, default male pattern baldness head, you know? And they were just like, well, let's just give you long hair. So he just has, like, shoulder length hair that's, like, you know, like, almost gone. And I'm like, why? Who made that decision? Yeah, it's just everything about this movie is just the worst choices pretty much across the board. But, you know, the Mick Jagger, Austin Butler character, Fade Rautha, that person is played by Sting. I don't know why. I don't know why that decision was, okay, well, we had Mick Jagger in the other one. Let's just replace him with another rock guy. I don't know. The worst thing is that Sting isn't necessarily bad in it. I don't think Sting really acted outside of this, but he wasn't the worst. Well, definitely not in this movie. So, a weird one. But I don't know. It wasn't necessarily boring. I was just always, like, reeling. I'm, like, trying to get caught up on everything. And I think if I hadn't just seen the Villeneuve Dune movies, I would have been completely lost. But because I had just kind of, I was already in that world, so I kind of knew what was going on. I knew the terms. I knew the characters. So I'm like, okay, I kind of get it. So, yeah, I would recommend maybe if you're going to see the David Lynch Dune, which I wouldn't recommend, but if you are one of those people, maybe you're a big David Lynch fan, and you're like, well, I've heard such bad things about this, maybe give it a chance. I would probably recommend seeing the Villeneuve ones probably shortly before, or maybe just watching a video or something of, like, the Dune plot explained in, like, 15 minutes or something, just so that you can kind of, like, have, like, that base level of knowledge kind of fresh in your mind, because otherwise I think it's going to be completely incomprehensible to you, which is how everybody responded to it at the time, pretty much how everyone responds to it these days if you're just going in cold. So check it out, I guess. It's on Max. All of these movies are on Max. Jodorowsky's Dune documentary, Max, this Dune, and then the other Dune. All of them are on Max. So if you want to have a Dune week like I did, you can. And it's pretty accessible, I guess. But I guess I'll talk a little bit about the Villeneuve Dune 2, because I did see it. I rated it 4.5 stars. I think it's better than the first one. Which I don't think is necessarily surprising. Even though I did love that first Dune movie, I think this movie does everything that first Dune movie did, and just one notch better. I will say it is one of those you'll probably want to rewatch the first one before you see it, because it starts as soon as that first movie ends. Like, there's no, not that you would expect a recap or anything, but it's kind of like, you know, watching a series or something and then, like, waiting 6 months and then the next season comes out and then you're like, oh, what's happening? Who are all these characters? What is a Harkonnen, or a Harkonnen, as they're called in the Villeneuve ones? What is all this? So I would recommend watching the first one, you know, before you see the second one, just so that everything's kind of fresh, because it has been 3 years. So, but it's very, very good. Like, surprisingly, there's a lot of, like, practical effects, or I was at least fooled into thinking they were. Villeneuve, I think he's one of those directors that's kind of the opposite of David Lynch, where he is known for having phenomenal special effects, like more so than any other person in the business right now, I would say, really prioritizes that above everything else. It's been really kind of fascinating because he's been, you know, doing the tours, giving interviews. Like, his philosophy on filmmaking is so different than a lot of people, you know, and I think there are some, like, criticisms of his that are kind of valid, and that, like, a lot of his character stuff is kind of flat, and that, you know, he isn't, like, the best writer in the business, which I think I would agree with, but he's also been, like, pretty open in the fact that he's, like, I don't, if it was possible for me to make a movie with no dialogue in it, he would, and just have it be told visually, which I think is his strong suit. Like, he's a really, really great visual storyteller. And I think that is, like, exemplified in Dune 2, especially with that Hans Zimmer score. Like, there are moments in this that are, like, jaw-droppingly amazing cinematic pieces. Like, when Paul learns to ride the sandworm, it is just, it is phenomenal. It is, like, one of the best, like, movie-going experiences I have had in, like, a long time, which I saw on, like, a packed movie theater on, like, a Sunday afternoon. It was great. And, you know, you could just feel the energy. Everything in this movie was electric. There's also, like, a really great scene where, like, it's black and white, and it's, like, heavily stylized. Yeah, it is. Yeah, there's choices in this movie that are great. I think it's weird that, like, this is the movie that's kind of, like, saving the box office right now. Not that it's really surprising, because the beginning part of the year is always the slowest, but it's just, like, it just doesn't feel like a typical blockbuster movie. Like, this isn't a Marvel movie, you know, it doesn't feel like it's really accessible. Like, it's a really heady sci-fi movie with a lot of layers in it, like, about messiahs and trusting overly charismatic leaders, or, like, people pulling the strings in the background. Like, there's a lot of, like, statements, like, spiritual statements, but also, like, political statements. Like, I think that's something that Villeneuve does really well in all of his movies. And it just is kind of weird that, like, it's a huge seller, which I guess Oppenheimer was too, but that one was also kind of tied in with the movement of, like, released alongside Barbie. So it's also a blockbuster. It's like, I wouldn't really describe that as a blockbuster either, considering it's mostly just people talking in rooms. But I guess it's a blockbuster. So I don't know. If you're on the fence of seeing Dune, of this new one, I mean, don't see this one without seeing the first one. Like, it is, you're going to be completely lost going into it if you haven't seen the first one. But I mean, if you're into sci-fi at all, I would recommend it. I had a realization this year that I love sci-fi. It was a genre that I was kind of always been like, eh, not really my thing. But I think when it's done well, I really, really like it. And Villeneuve is absolutely carrying this whole genre on his back, because, like, nobody is making heady sci-fi anymore. You know, Star Trek used to be kind of, like, the pinnacle of, like, I don't want to say, like, heady sci-fi, but it was always kind of smart. There were kind of smart things about, especially in, like, Next Gen and, like, that era of, like, kind of interesting problems, without, like, dumbing it down for general audiences. And, like, nobody's doing that anymore. So it is kind of fun to see that style of sci-fi still getting made, and not only still getting made, but doing very well in the box office. So not that I really care about the box office. It's just interesting to see reception at this point. So check it out. It's very, very good. I honestly can't imagine anybody watching either of the Dune movies and being disappointed, because I loved them. So watch them. Really, really good. But that's probably as much as I'll go into Dune 2 right now. Since it is pretty new, it just came out. So no spoy boys, obviously. We might do a feature about it coming soon, or we'll just talk about it on the podcast. But there will be more talk about Dune eventually once we get there. I didn't even go into what happens in Dune 2 and the David Lynch Dune, really, because I don't know. Is that a spoiler if I talk about what happened? Because it's the same thing. It's adapted from the same thing.
I suppose, yeah. It's kind of the same thing.
Although, yeah, it's like, it's the last 30 minutes of the David Lynch Dune is what they turn into 2 hours and 40 minutes in the new one. Don't ask me how. Don't ask me how they condense that much into 30 minutes. Yeah. I will say, if they are looking to adapt Dune Messiah, which it seems like Villeneuve is interested in, if he's involved, I'm on board 100%. I do know that once you start going down the Dune sequel hole, they definitely decrease in quality. Not only that, they get like, I guess the word is problematic. They get like pro-fascist a little bit. Like it might be in Messiah where it is, where Paul and Stilgar, who's like the Fremen leader, or whatever, one of the Fremen leaders, they basically have a conversation about how cool Hitler is. So they're probably going to have to cut that, because, I mean, I don't know what Frank Herbert was thinking. I know that once his son took over after Frank Herbert died, that's when things kind of really went off the deep end into like weirdo crazy stuff. But I guess Frank Herbert kind of dipped his toes in too. Not that like Paul Atreides is supposed to be the good guy necessarily, which I think is exemplified in this movie. Although I will say, a lot of people, you know, as I was going into it, were like, yeah, you guys don't get it. Like, this is an example like an American Psycho or like a Joker, where like people are like, no, the Joker is the good guy. I don't understand. I can't comprehend a world where the protagonist is not a good person or who I'm supposed to be rooting for. And like, I kind of went into it with that expectation. I don't totally agree 100% because, Paul Atreides does want to wipe out the Harkonnens, but the Harkonnens did wipe out his entire family and, like, all of the people he cared about. So, like, I do kind of understand that it's like, yes, that is kind of genocidal in nature and it does lead to, like, a bigger conversation. But also I don't think it is like an American Psycho, Joker, Taxi Driver thing where like people online are like, they don't get it and they root for the person you're not supposed to. Because I do think for the most part, there is a legitimate argument to be made that Paul Atreides is doing like the quote unquote right thing, even if he's not a good person. I don't know. It's an interesting conversation, and maybe we'll get into it more once you see it. But that's Dune week. That's all of the Dune adaptations that have happened so far. I will obviously keep y'all posted with what Villeneuve is doing next. Probably one of my favorite directors working right now. At least his last four movies have been masterpieces. I know he's talked about like that him doing that Blade Runner movie was like a huge mistake and he's never going to make another movie for in someone else's like cinematic universe, he put it. I don't totally agree with him because that movie is better than the original. It's just that nobody saw it. It was a big flop, which is kind of crazy that he got the rights to Dune, but I guess they're just handing that out to anybody at this point. So check it out. Check out Dune. It's a good story. Read the book if you want to. I haven't, and I can't read. So that's that. And that's actually it for me. I did a lot of Dune stuff. I have been rewatching all the Pixar movies because I've been sad and I need a pick me up, I guess. So just kind of in the background, I've been watching all the Pixar movies. I'm up to Incredibles right now, which side note, Finding Nemo and Toy Story 2 are phenomenal. I didn't remember them being as good as they are. Just really, really great movies. I had fond memories of them as a kid, but I hadn't seen them since I was. And I'm both looking forward and not looking forward to Toy Story 3 because I'm sure that will emotionally devastate me. Now that I am not quite Andy's age, I'm a little bit older than Andy was in that movie. But, you know, when I first saw it, I was like 12 or 11. I think it came out in 2011. So I was 10 or 11, I guess. So very different times. So there's that. But I think I'm going to throw it on over to Babby for his segment of the show now.
Okay. Yeah. A lot of albums to talk about, but all of them are not out yet.
Oh.
So, I guess big week for things that are coming. But I think the biggest release was Schoolboy Q, new album, Blue Lips. First since Crash Talk, when was that? 2019. Oh my God. I feel so old doing the last couple of weeks of this. It's like, oh, I remember the last album, 2018, 2019.
Yeah, just with MGMT too. It was like,
yeah. And these are records that like most of the time I heard when they came out. It's just kind of trippy. But this is his first back. Crash Talk was very kind of middle of the road. Definitely like his least, people were not interested in it nearly as much. There are a couple of bangers on there though. Num Num Juice is a classic still. I will say it. It's okay. Amazing. Schoolboy Q, TDE's back doing stuff, doing a lot of stuff. We'll talk about that. But more of the gangster rap kind of West Coast style, that we're kind of used to from TDE. Except he adds a lot of nice pop elements in his stuff usually that work pretty well. Blue Lips is pretty solid. Wasn't really sure what to expect. There was like four singles, I think, to this thing. I only listened to two of them. And I think they both had this kind of more soul, type instrumental. And those two songs are like some of my favorites on it. But it's a really solid record. It's got 18 tracks, an hour long. It is a little bit long. I think there's a bit of filler on here. But I think for the most part, it's a really nice kind of grab bag of styles. It's a nice evolution on a style. I mean, I haven't heard Oxymoron in years, but it's pretty solid. There are some points where it's like, it was kind of a roller coaster listening to it the first time because I'm like, oh my God, we're so back. And then it kind of falls into like kind of middle of the range. Like, okay. A lot of the times I think the issue I had was like songs either sound like they never started, or I think the biggest issue I have on further listens is like, I don't think the features do that well. I think like 90% of the features don't do that well. I think Rico Nasty does great, but I think the kind of structure of that track kind of fails it a little bit. Because Pop, the second track with Rico Nasty is really great. It's got a really nice energy. The chorus is really catchy. But like, you have this really nice play between Schoolboy Q and Rico Nasty, which are both, it's a really good combo. Like, they're both kind of this grimy, energetic type of vocalist. But you have Rico Nasty like starting her verse with 20 seconds of the song left, and it kind of just ends. I feel like the song should be like 5 minutes and not 3 minutes, because like the song really found its footing once she started doing her verse, and then it just kind of like ended. Same with like the Freddie Gibbs feature on Ohio. Like Freddie Gibbs comes in when there's like 40 seconds left of the track. It feels less like a feature and more like an afterthought on part of these. I mean, Schoolboy Q can still carry these tracks pretty well, and I think his performance on this record is really good. It's nice seeing a little bit more of like a mature, like almost reflective side to him. But it's a little weird when it comes to the features on this thing. I do think Lovebirds with Devin Malik and Lance Skywalker, that's a good use of the features. I think that track flows really well. I think Absol does really good on Foe as well. But it's a pretty good record. I do need to listen to it more. I have not had time to do that. It's solid. It's one of the better hip-hop releases of this year. I don't have anything like crazy to say about it. I think Thank God For Me is the clear like best song on this record. Classic Schoolboy Q hype, like incredible energy. But I also love Blue Slides and Yearn 101. That kind of track run from track 3 to track 6 is great. I also really like Germany 86 and A Pig Feet with Childish Major. That song goes hard as well. So definitely check it out. It's interesting to see him, because I feel like he is so like 2010s hip hop coded. It's interesting to see him update that a little bit in a way that's not like too over the top, but still gives like a little bit of a nostalgic factor to it. So check it out. It's pretty solid. I will probably have more thoughts on it later when I have more time to dig into it. But yeah, good release. I think that was the main album I listened to.
Oh no.
So you mentioned maybe doing it.
You cut out a little bit there.
I did. Why did that happen? Did you listen to it at all?
Listen to what?
The Schoolboy Q record.
I have not. Gotcha. I have not. I know that it came out and that I would probably like it, but I have not listened to it yet.
I think you'll find it decent.
Okay. I'll listen to it. I mean,
yeah.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
It's not like a must hear for you, I would say, but there's probably a couple songs that you would enjoy.
Okay.
But yeah, so it's solid. Check it out. Other song I listened to this week, I guess, that's the only other thing I knew I listened to, is someone named Luca. He's a rapper. I have not really heard of him until this week, but I am definitely interested. He has a record with Real Bad Man coming out in the end of this month. Real Bad Man has done some great collab albums with Boldy James. I think he's done two of them with Boldy James now. Both those are really fantastic. And he's pairing up with Luca here, which is the first song I've ever heard from him. Definitely more in that abstract conscious hip hop range, which is great. That's what I want. And they released a single for it, The Initiate's Peace. Got Billy Woods on a feature, because he's got to have a feature every week, otherwise it wouldn't be a week in this year. They don't sleep, I guess. But this is fantastic. It's like a really nice mix of like very almost lyrical miracle type hip-hop. I think of like Mos Def style conscious hip-hop. That's kind of the style he brings, mixed with the more abstract underground elements of today. And it turns out really well. There's even a little bit of like more of the kind of Billy Woods sound in this track, when it comes to like using different kinds of horns and more kind of like African styles of production. There's some really nice instruments at the end. Some kind of woodwind instrument that comes in that's really great. It's kind of a blend of that, which is really nice. So yeah, this record comes out at the end of this month. I am so interested in this. But yeah, I'm very excited for that. That sounds right up my alley, and I think I need to start looking at his back catalog. Because people said he's pretty great. It's just one of those that completely fell off my radar for a while. But yeah, always love when I find new people like this that are in the same kind of realm. There's always more people out there. So that one's great. That'll be coming out end of this month. And now I guess we can just talk about all the stuff that's coming. Okay. We got a lot of announcements this week. I guess we'll start with the most pressing one. Mike's releasing a new album tomorrow.
Of course.
Because why not? This one's with Tony Seltzer, which is a great name.
Ooh, Tony Seltzer. I'm guessing
he's a producer. I'm looking at the producer list for this record. It's Tony Seltzer and Vinny Fanta, which is great. Hell? This is awesome. I really hope this is two different people and not just the same person going by two different names. Those are great names.
They are. But
yeah, this is a new one coming out tonight, so I will talk about it next week. It seems pretty short. It's 11 tracks. Knowing Mike, it's going to be 2-3 minute tracks. Sure. But we got an Earl Sweatshirt feature on there, it looks like. There's also a song called 100 Gex. So,
okay.
yeah, that one's called Pinball. So we'll talk about that next week. Yeah, that was a surprise. But Mike's the kind of guy that I feel like just never stops. So I'm sure it'll be quality. Next, we got Sir. I think he released another single this week, but I'm not listening to it because album's coming out end of this month. So TDE is firing on all cylinders, it seems.
Yeah.
Just had Schoolboy Q. Now we're doing Sir. This one comes out March 22nd. It's called Heavy. I did put it on our list because I think you will enjoy this album a lot.
Okay.
So thinking of reactions in order for this one. Especially when you look at the feature list, when you got Ty Dolla $ign, Isaiah Rashad, Anderson .Paak, Absol, it doesn't get better than
that. Yo, that's great.
So the single Karma with Isaiah Rashad is one of my favorite songs this year. It's so good. I think you're really going to enjoy it.
All right.
So looking forward to that one big time. I'm a big fan of Sir. I think Chasing Summer is a fantastic summer album. It's one of those that always comes back in my rotation when it gets warm out. But yeah, so we'll check that out at the end of this month. Another album we're gonna have to do on the channel. Porter Robinson's back. Album's done. I don't know if this is the official title. It's just called Three. I don't know if that's the official title. He just said that the album's done and that it's coming soon. So I'd expect probably an April or May release.
Yo.
But yeah, we'll have to do a reaction with that with Bab Jab.
Bab Jab, of course.
Yeah. But very excited for that. I think Nurture was the last one he did in 2021, so makes sense.
Yeah. Great record.
So excited for that. Another new one that's got announced, Charlie XCX, back.
Man, everybody's back.
I know. She's releasing a new album, Brat. Great title. The album cover's even better.
Is it just green and black Arial font?
Yeah. Okay. Like slightly stretched. And yeah.
Okay.
We'll see. I don't think we have much info on it other than the title and the cover, which may or may not be official. Knowing Charlie, this probably is the official artwork. So,
yeah.
But very excited for that. I haven't heard any Charlie in a long time. I know that my interest in her kind of like dropped off a little bit. We still have Pop 2 on the list somewhere. But excited for that one. I feel like she was talking about wanting to do like more dance centric stuff again. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
But I think that's the majority of it. I was looking around at Casey Musgrave's page just randomly because that comes out pretty soon.
Yeah.
There's writing credits already for the record, and Jid has a writing credit.
Wait, really?
Which is really weird. It's just all these like random people, and then it's Jid for one song. I wonder if she's interpolating a lyric or something.
Oh, maybe. That's probably it.
Yeah.
If so, I mean, weird could, choice.
Yeah. It could like not even be accurate. I don't know. But
yeah.
I just saw that. I'm like, oh, interesting.
Huh. Wow.
But there's a lot of writers on this thing, which I don't know how to feel about that, but whatever. So we'll see how that record turns out. We might do a reaction to that.
I like Deeper Well, the song. I haven't That's listened good. To the other single, but that song is really good. I like it.
I don't know. The cover scares me.
Yeah, the cover is really bad. And I don't know why that's the cover.
No idea.
It's the weirdest facial expression I think I've ever seen on an album cover.
Yeah, I just don't understand what she's trying to convey there. But maybe once we hear the album, it'll make more sense. But probably not.
I doubt it, yeah.
It'll be really fun making thumbnails, though.
Well, that's true.
I don't even know how to match that expression.
I don't think we can.
But I think that's it. 21 Pilots is back, too, but I don't really care about that.
Yo!
So, apparently they released a song that was actually pretty good. Sometimes they do that every once in a while out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But, yeah, not interested in that, really. Doesn't Taylor Swift release soon? Oh, it's April 19th.
I don't know. See?
Yeah. I'm hoping we get SZA soon. Strike him while the iron's hot.
I'm hoping so, too. Saturn's great.
Yeah. That's a very good. There's also a little Yachty album coming with James Blake.
Oh,
that'll be interesting. Yeah. Be interesting to see if Yachty continues on his, like, I'm a music nerd now phase. Be interesting.
Great. I mean, wouldn't mind another psych rock album.
Yeah. I really liked his last album. I just hate when he talks about it.
Oh, is he kind of pretentious about it?
He's pretentious in the way where he's like, I wanted to make, like, real music.
Oh.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, that, don't do that.
Yeah.
Do your cool thing and just, yeah. Yeah.
But we'll see what comes of that. We also have Knocked Loose back, which is a kind of like metalcore-ish band. I have listened to Laugh Tracks because my girlfriend insisted we listen to it. And it was good, which is weird because I don't like metalcore. yeah, it's a pretty good record. It's so angsty that, like, it makes you physically, like, get in a bad mood. And I think that's the effect it's supposed to have because it, yeah, it's great. It's kind of crazy. But they got a new record coming out in May, I believe. So I'll probably check that out. Since I've already had a metal craze this year. But I think that's it. A lot of new stuff coming. Not a lot of stuff we can talk about right now, though.
Yes, but we will talk about
shaping up to be a big year. So.
Yeah, for real. Like, everybody's coming back this year.
Mm-hmm.
Weird, because last year was so slow.
It really was.
Glad stuff is back. Although, I am kind of curious, because, like, I feel like COVID kind of, like, reset everybody's clocks. So, like, now everybody's going to drop at the same time, and it's going to come in, like, waves. Because everybody had to wait to release until after COVID ended, and they can start touring again. So I wonder if it's going to, like, every 3 years or so, there's just going to be, like, a huge wave of, like, everybody dropping at the same time.
Yeah, because that is kind of happening, because that's what happened in 22.
Yeah.
Because 21 was, like, dead when it came to mainstream artists, but we got so many fantastic albums from, like, smaller artists.
Yeah, yeah.
And then 2022, you got, like, Kendrick, you got Jid, you got Wiseblood, you got The Weeknd, you got SZA, Denzel Curry. Like, all of those people dropped. And then last year was kind of, I mean, we got Sufjan.
Yeah, that was probably Boy Genius, I guess.
Yeah. We got an Andre 3000 album, which is crazy.
Well, that's true. We got stuff. It was like one thing and then like months and then one thing and then, yeah.
It was very spaced out.
Yeah.
But, yeah. I think the amount of albums I'll listen to this year is probably going to be like double the amount of last year, I'm guessing. I'm already kind of like filling stuff out quite a lot, so.
Yeah. Yeah, this, and I'm excited. We said some stuff that I'm looking forward to now.
Heavy hitters. Yeah, I think this album's going to be great. So we'll do a reaction to that.
Sweet. Nice. Well, this next week we're doing a reaction to Fleet Foxes.
Real.
So that's going to be good. We're also doing, if you have not seen it, we did a reaction to the Billy Woods Aethiopes, which is a great record. So if you have not checked it out, I know a lot of people watched our MGMT video, but stick around, watch the Billy Woods one, because that one's really good too. So
variety.
That's what our channel is known for.
The spice of life.
Yeah.
What our channel is meant for, and the reason why our channel does not perform as well as it probably could.
No, We could just
that's okay.
React to one genre and we would do very well for ourselves.
We could.
But I don't care.
We're not doing that though. No. I mean we had our Arca series, which was very popular.
That's true.
Our Mitski series is pretty popular.
I like Mitski.
Real.
What we need to do, was it Bury Me at Makeout Creek?
Yes, I do want to do that
one. I've heard that some of the best Mitski songs are on there.
Real. Yeah, so, we will be doing that this year. I do want to listen to that.
Yeah. So, we'll do that. But I think aside from that, that'll do it. This week's podcast. I don't know what else we're going to be talking about next week. This week was very much, okay, Dune came out, so let me kind of focus my efforts on that. But next week, no big event, so we'll see what happens. Maybe more sci-fi, maybe not. I'm kind of feeling a sci-fi kick, though. But I don't know if anything is really going to scratch that Dune 2 itch for me the same way it did. But yeah, aside from that, that's it. So, bye.